Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Epic Podcast. Introducing your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you live from the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, Episode 8. I'm your host, Nelson Lugo.
And I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Dude, what's the matter?
What do you mean?
You just sound different.
Oh, right.
And I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Much better. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to cover all kinds of topics, both nerdy and not so nerdy. But for right now, let's do a bit of a catching up. Schaefer the Dark Lord, you've had a very busy month, oh March.
That's not true.
Yeah, come on, you just got back from South by Southwest, right?
Okay, I went to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, music festival.
Yeah.
I've gone for a number of years now.
Yes, you have.
I went down there, I had a great show.
Yeah.
I saw some great shows. I saw Ghetto Boys and Ultramagnetic MCs with Cool Keith and Zebra Cats featuring Ingina Red Fox. I had a great time. I had a really great time in Austin, Texas. But really, who cares?
Oh. I do. I live vicariously through your life experiences.
I understand that. But Lugo, you're familiar with the expression, the elephant in the room, correct?
Oh, dear. Yeah.
I feel like there's something more important that has happened in this past month.
Yeah.
That is far more important than me getting drunk in Texas, waggling my finger and rapping about cats to a bunch of nerds. So let me ask you, Lugo.
Yeah?
What's new with you?
Oh, dear. I don't even know where to begin. I guess I'm just going to say it. I have cancer. Yeah. It's I hate to start the podcast on such a downer.
But if you don't, then our four listeners are going to think to themselves, why aren't they talking about this? It's been all over Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I've been in the hospital for 20 days. I was diagnosed with testicular cancer.
A particular strand?
Is it? Yeah. I don't recall the name right. I think it sounds like an Indian name, like a Native American name, like Susquehanna or Sacagawea. It sounds like that. I'll put it on the show notes and I'll make links to, you know, specific diagnoses. But I have a very specific strain of testicular cancer, which is oddly enough good news, because it's one of the types of cancer that is not only treatable, but absolutely curable.
That's terrific.
The prognosis looks good. I've started my first round of chemotherapy, and I have three more rounds of chemotherapy, so I'm going to be dealing with this for another 4 to 5 months, give or take. And after that, this will be basically in 6 months, this will be an unpleasant memory, and a year from now, you know, this will be one of those, like, you know, dark jokes I tell, you know, when to make the room uncomfortable.
So if you're getting chemo treatments, does this mean that your treatment is not going to require any sort of invasive surgery?
That is correct. I don't need invasive surgery. That was one of the possible options, but my oncologist and all of my doctors, and I have a small army of doctors,
actually, I would imagine,
they all seem to think that this is the best possible treatment for me, which is odd. Like, I'm not going to lose a testicle, but after the treatment, there's a 90% chance I'm going to be sterile. So I get to keep the guns, but I get no bullets. Basically, my balls will be decorative, which means I can probably put anything in there, really.
Confetti,
like 20-sided dice.
Mike and Ikes.
Oh man, I could go for some Mike and
Ikes. Pop rocks.
Right? Oh no, I don't want any pop rocks near bodily fluids.
You could make for a really fun New Year's.
True. True. Yeah.
Now, tell me this. You say you have three more rounds of chemo to go.
Yeah.
What is a round of chemo?
Okay. Well, I call it a round of chemo. I'm sure there's more technical jargon, but a round of chemo is essentially 5 days of chemotherapy. And what that is getting several bags of chemicals intravenously introduced into my system.
Pumped in through a port in your chest.
Yes. I got a port surgically implanted into my chest, which is essentially a little titanium reservoir that has a rubber diaphragm on top of it. And there's a tube leading from the titanium reservoir into a ventricle in my heart. So basically the chemicals, or a majority of the chemicals, go straight into my heart. The reason being, if they were to intravenously introduce that into, say, a vein in my arm, the chemotherapy is so toxic that my arm would blister and burn as a result of receiving.
Wow.
Yeah. The reason why it doesn't internally, because internal organs don't have nerve endings. And so it's, you know, it gets introduced faster into my system that way and safer.
Basically. You know, we actually learned that last month.
That's right. That's right.
Dr. Eviler told us that the brain has no nerve endings, so it doesn't have pain receptors.
Right. It has zero pain receptors, as most of the major organs in the body.
So one round then is just a single treatment.
Right. And
you go in and you have a bag of chemicals pumped into your hell port.
No, basically it's 5 days.
5 days is one round.
5 days is one round. So every day for 5 days, I get several bags of chemicals.
And now that you're out of the hospital, you go to your doctor's clinic.
That's the plan. The plan is to, which I'm not, to be honest, I'm not entirely sure how this is going to work. I have an appointment next week with my main oncologist, and we're going to talk about what that is and what that's going to look like. But it's entirely possible that I'm going to get treatment and then get to go home at the end of it. But it's a 5-hour process. So it's not like... It's not like I get to do anything else that day.
Does it just takes that long to pump the chemicals in?
Well, yeah. Well, because there's a lot of bags. Like, the first bag I get is essentially nutrients. It's like magnesium, potassium, and a bunch of other things just to sort of fortify my body, because they're about to do some major damage to it. The second bag I get is, and that's introduced through my arm. The next bag I get is nausea medication, which... Luckily, I have avoided all of the nausea horror stories. I've been getting stories from people who've gone through chemotherapy, and the number one thing that everybody talks about is the debilitating nausea that everybody experiences. I've experienced zero nausea because of this medication that they're giving me. So I'm thankful for that. The next bag I get is a bag of steroids, which again is just to fortify my body for what?
Strengthen you up for what the poison they're about to put
in. The poison they're about to put in my body, yes. Then I get two bags of chemo. The first bag takes an hour to drip into my system. The second bag takes 2 hours to drip into my system. And then there's a third bag, which is just essentially sugar water, which is to flush my system for, you know, making sure that there's something else in there other than just toxic chemicals,
sure,
basically. And the good news is that medical science is advancing all the time. So the treatment that I'm getting wasn't even available, say, like a year ago to somebody in my same condition. But the chemo is worse than the cancer. And they kind of have to do it that way. In order to kill something as horrible as cancer, you have to create a treatment that's twice as horrible than cancer. And the chemicals they're not intelligent. They can't distinguish between healthy tissue and cancerous tissue.
They're just on a warpath. They're just a swarm of wasps.
Yeah, basically, they're just going through there, and they are damaging almost every cell in my body to some extent. The hope is, or rather what the medical science has sort of determined, is that the cancer cells are going to deteriorate faster than my healthy cells, so that by the end of my fourth session, there'll be no more cancer cells, and then the healthy cells will just take time to rebuild and get healthy again. But yeah, they're basically filling my body with poison 5 days a week for the next few months.
And this is why most patients tend to experience extreme nausea.
Oh, more than that. There's an 80% chance that I'm going to lose all my hair.
Right.
There's a significant chance. Well, I'm definitely going to be sterile at the end of this.
Right.
Well, I have a 90%. I have a 10% chance of not being sterile. So I guess I'll hold on to that, whatever the hell that's worth. There's a chance of me getting blurred vision, suffering from major vertigo, like just having dizzy spells, things like that. There's also, I chuckled when the doctor told me this. There's also a chance that the cure that they're giving me might give me leukemia.
Huh.
Now, granted, it's less than 1%. It's like a 0.6% chance that I could develop leukemia as a result of this treatment. And that's damn good odds. I'll put money on that in Vegas any day of the week.
Sure, I would too.
Yeah, so the likelihood of me developing leukemia is so remotely minute. The benefits outweigh the outcomes.
So now, how many rounds of leukemia do you have to have, and how many have you already undergone?
My doctor said at least four.
At least four.
I've done one round.
Okay.
And so the plan is to wait 2 weeks for my body to heal, essentially, and then go back and do five more days.
Okay.
And then wait 2 weeks, five more days, and then
continue.
Right. And then at the end of the fourth one, you know, he'll make a determination based on, you know, probably another biopsy, or probably more than likely CAT scans to see if there is any cancerous tissue left.
Sure.
You know, my hope is that I beat this in four rounds. If not, then we'll go to a fifth round.
I think that's everybody's hope.
Well, look, I'm not going to die from this. That's given.
There's some wood over there.
What do you mean?
There's some wood over there.
Oh, I'm not going to knock it. All right, fine.
Okay.
Knock the wood. I'm not going to die from this because I'm getting treatment. You know, the reason why I went to the hospital is because I thought I had appendicitis.
Right, you had a terrible stomach ache for days.
Oh, God, I had the most debilitating stomach ache I've ever had in my entire life.
It was bad. Clearly it was. It was bad enough that you went to the emergency room.
Yeah. Well, it was weird. Do you want to hear the whole story?
Sure.
All right. So I wake up Thursday morning with a mild tummy ache. And I just thought...
Tummy ache. You're so adorable.
Well, yeah. It was a little tummy ache. And I just thought I was hungry. So, you know, I went out and I ate something. But it kept getting worse. And so I thought, okay, maybe I have some kind of like indigestion cramping thing. So I got some over-the-counter medication. I took that, took a nap, decided, you know what, let me just sleep this off. I woke up, it was worse. I thought maybe I had, then I convinced myself that this was probably some kind of like 24-hour thing. Let me just go to bed and tomorrow I'll be fine. I try to get some sleep. I wake up. The pain wakes me up around 1 a.m. to the point where I was doubled over, sweating, shaking, and crying. I check my handy-dandy pocket computer, and I look up lower right abdominal pain. And the first word that comes up is appendicitis. And I say, fuck that. That's what killed Houdini. I'm not going out like that.
immediately called a car, got myself to the hospital. They rushed me in. They gave me morphine, which was so good. So good after being in pain all day long. And they ran a battery of tests. And the reason why it took a week for me to get my diagnosis, because they didn't know what the fuck I had. At first, I thought it was appendicitis. Then, you know, one test came up and they saw I had an elevated white blood cell count. And then I got another test that said I had, I had some kind of like polyps growing near my spine. And then they said all kinds of things. None of it was cancer. And the thing is, it was so confusing because I wasn't showing any of the signs or symptoms that you would associate with this. Like I hadn't lost any weight dramatically. Like I hadn't, I wasn't feverish or nauseous or dizzy or anything. I just kind of walked in with a tummy ache. And finally, they gave my chart to an oncologist and said, here, take a look at this. He gave me a physical examination. He came in, he checked all my lymph areas and stuff. And he gave me a checker on my testicle area. And he's like, okay, that's good. And then he tests the other one. He's like, whoa, it's a bad day at the office when the doctor goes, whoa.
Yeah.
I hadn't even noticed this, but like one testicle was 3 times the size as the other one.
You hadn't noticed that?
I hadn't noticed it. Well, I was in pain.
Well, you're such an overshare on the internet. I figured you would have tweeted about that. OMG, you guys, one of my balls is 3 times bigger than the other one. That sounds like a tweet that you would post.
Here's the thing. When I'm touching my balls, I'm not really feeling for size. You know what I mean?
No, you're feeling for recreation.
Exactly. And so he immediately ordered a biopsy. Which the biopsy was loads of fun. I'd never had a biopsy before. And it's, if you've never had the back of your stomach touched from the inside.
Gross.
While you're awake, that's an experience.
Wow.
And so they biopsied. And it took a long time because biopsies, particularly my biopsy, that's not done with a computer. That's real people with real microscopes staining real tissue.
Right.
It took a long, long time because my oncologist ordered a battery of stains, and each stain brings back new information. And so finally, after about a week of being in the hospital, he tells me I have testicular cancer, which was good news because the other option was a type of lymphoma, which is bad news.
Yeah.
So it was a weird time where all week long I'm rooting for testicular cancer.
Oh, I remember. I remember you were like, ball cancer, ball cancer, ball cancer.
Right.
And I was like, I never thought I would see the day when my best friend is actually almost praying for testicular cancer.
Right. Because, like I said, testicular cancer is treatable and curable. Lymphoma, not so much.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit more grim of an outlook.
Yes. It's, it's one of the, I don't know a lot about what I have just yet. I'm still learning, and I'm going to be an expert by the end of this, obviously.
Of course.
But yeah, lymphoma is, I don't know if lymphoma is one of the deadlier ones, but it's definitely up there in the problematic ones.
Yeah.
That would probably require radiation as well. I'm lucky that all I need is chemo.
Yeah.
If I needed radiation, I don't know what the fuck I would do. But, so, 20 days later, I was in the hospital for 20 days and, getting all kinds of meds, getting all kinds of chemotherapy, and being treated wonderfully well. And I want to give a shout out to all of the doctors and nurses over at Mount Sinai and Astoria, Queens, because they did a stellar job and just were absolutely fantastic and supportive of me and my condition. And I just really loved that hospital.
Oh man, that nursing staff. Every time I went over to visit, they were so nice.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
They all spoke very highly of you. I think they were, a lot of the patients in most hospitals, and specifically that hospital,
sure,
it's pretty grim. It's pretty bleak. All of your roommates I saw in the time that you were there were all in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
Whereas they benefited from having a man of showbiz in their midst for 20 days because you just had this like sort of like playful rapport with all of them, and you were cracking jokes, and you're a lot of fun to be around. Look,
yeah.
Look, just milk this. You're not going to get a lot of this from me.
That's true.
You are a lot of fun to be around, and I would imagine as a patient in a hospital for the nursing staff, You were probably really pleasant. I almost got in a fist fight with one of your nurses because she was like, oh, she saw me walking down the hall and look, I was probably stoned and I had sunglasses on. And she was like, oh, you must be here to see Nelson. How on earth would you know that? Why? Yes, I am. She's like, oh, Nelson's my buddy. And I was like, no, Nelson's my buddy. And then I knifed her. And
no,
I didn't actually visit you that day because I ran because I was afraid.
No, you didn't knife anybody. You know what? I went out of my way. I don't know why, actually. I think it was like an unconscious thing. I went out of my way to really be grateful to all of the nurses and nurses aides.
Well, what do you mean you don't know why? They were really nice to you. They took really good care of you.
No, I know.
You don't know why. You were just you were showing them your appreciation.
Well, I'm generally a please and thank you kind of guy, but I think I felt like I wanted or needed, I don't know, to go the extra mile, you know what I mean? And make them laugh and make them smile. And because these people have shit jobs and they're dealing with people at the worst time in their lives.
True.
You know, and sometimes that life can just wear someone down. And, you know, I didn't want to be another statistic there. And I really wanted to let them know that I really appreciated what they were doing for me. And so anytime anybody came in to visit, you know, not visit with me, but like check on me, I would try to make them laugh. And, you know, I really made some, I don't know if I made any friends there per se, but I definitely bonded with a lot of them. And I'm, you know, absolutely, absolutely grateful for everything they did for me.
I am also very grateful for everything they did for you.
Yeah.
I even had to take, I didn't really knife that nurse.
I know you didn't.
I did have a moment with her, like, one of the last times I visited you, I had a moment when I left and I saw her, cause I saw her there a couple of times when I came to see you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of took her aside and thanked her for taking care of my best friend and then tried to get her number cause man, she was cute.
I know. Right.
Ooh, good Lord.
Good gravy.
That's what I do. I wait for my best friend to get sick with cancer.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, this opens up a whole new dating pool.
The greatest wingman that ever was. Ever.
Cancer.
But yeah, it's, I mean, all in all, considering the bad hand I've been dealt, I mean, all in all, I feel pretty lucky.
Yeah. Your spirits have been remarkably high during the whole thing.
Well, I try. I mean, I have my moments. I mean, there were times in a hospital where I just kind of lost it.
Sure.
Because the reality of the situation was just too much for me.
Sure.
You know? And even as they were wheeling, like the last day, as they were wheeling me out, I started crying like uncontrollably. And to be honest, I don't know why. Because I was kind of happy to be leaving the hospital, but at the same time, I'm going home with cancer. So it's been up and down. It's been really, I hate this phrase. It's been an emotional roller coaster for me. But I'm doing my best to keep my spirits up. It's not easy all the time, but it's, I guess we kind of have to talk about this. The overwhelming amount of support that I've gotten, particularly online, is, I think, undeserved. But it's overwhelming. It's too much. It's too much. I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know how to deal with all of this sort of outcry of goodwill and... It's too much.
Perhaps you should just recognize that it's alien, that it's different for you, that it is a... behavior, it is a treatment that you are receiving en masse from a large part of both your personal community and as well as a lot of strangers from the internet that you are receiving that you're not used to receiving. It's not
at
it's,
all.
It's not unwarranted. It's not undeserved.
Well,
people care about you, dude.
Yeah.
And you just haven't had a situation where you have needed to, where this sort of outpouring of support has been warranted before. So it's not unwarranted. You deserve it because you've brought a lot of joy to a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, but I also have a lot of detractors. You know what I mean? Like I have a lot of people who I don't see eye to eye with, you know?
Right. And even those people are showing their support.
I know. I am uncomfortable with the amount of support that I'm getting. And I don't know how to process it. I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know what to do with it.
You don't really have to do anything with it. You don't owe anybody any. You know, you don't have to like write a bunch of thank you cards.
Well, no. I mean, I'm trying to be gracious. I mean, I thank them and I acknowledge them when I can.
I think that's all you have to do. And at least and take some solace in the fact that you are supported and loved by a great number of people. That's all you have to do.
Blarg.
I know, you have a hard time with that.
I have a...
You're so self-loathing.
Well, I don't know if I'm self-loathing, but...
You are self-loathing.
Shut up. Shut your fucking face.
You know what? You know what? And here, let me say this as an aside. It's unfortunate that you're not experiencing the intense nausea that a lot of people get with chemo.
Why?
Because that would make you such a great candidate for medicinal marijuana.
Well, you know what? Even though I'm not experiencing the sort of debilitating nausea, I am experiencing lots of other things.
Oh, good. Medicinal marijuana.
So
I just want to say to our audience, in case I haven't mentioned this before, Nelson Lugo, one of the stats that would be on the back of his trading card would be the fact that he has never used an illegal drug, not even one time.
Not even one time.
Not even once. Not even like he tried it, like he was in college and some friends were like listening to the Pink Floyd in their hotel room. And he was like, I'll take it off that weed. And then he was like, that's not for me. No, not even one time.
Not even one.
Which.
Never been curious.
Really.
I've just never been curious.
Not even been curious. Never. It's he passed the point and was like, I guess that's the thing I'm not going to do.
Yeah.
Which just should really, really underscore how ironic his closest friendship is. Because it's with me, old Johnny Substance Dumpster. And I've been trying for years to get him to like
half
man, half drugs. That's me, Shay for the Dark Lord. And I've been trying for years because I'm always like, Lugo, you are such a candidate for being a pothead because
you say
because,
this.
Because
but,
let me tell you why. Because you're grumpy all the time. Shut up. You got to let me get through this list. You're grumpy all the time. You spend most of your time playing video games and eating crappy food. And look, those are the calling cards of potheads. I'm grumpy. Now I smoke weed. Oh, my God. Now that shit doesn't matter. So let's play Metal Gear and eat Doritos.
Wow.
And you are just the perfect candidate for it, and you've never done it. And I haven't really pressured you. I've offered you lots of times. You're like, I've got really bad asthma in my lungs. I'll make you some goddamn brownies. And you're just like, boo, 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 boo. So now there was a part of me that was like, oh, he's going to come out of this, and he's going to be in chemo. And he's going to be really nauseous. And they always say that, like the medicinal weed, that like helps people with their nausea and gives them their appetite back. Oh, this is my chance. This is my opportunity to turn Nelson Lugo into a pothead. Also, you're coming off of a like 20-day morphine bender. So, and you liked it. That was kind of fun seeing you in the hospital full of OxyContin and morphine.
Yeah.
And your eyes are all glossed over and you're confused. And I'm like, hell yeah. That's like the Nelson Lugo that I thought I was going to get on Christmas Day one year. The one who would get all fucked up and be stupid with me.
Yeah.
So,
I have two things to say. One, having been someone who's never taken an illegal drug, morphine and oxycodone is awesome. It is so fucking awesome.
Oh my God, I was gonna pull the tube out of your arm and just suck it. Just suck the morphine right out of the bag.
I can't believe how good that shit is. And I was in severe pain.
Yeah.
Severe pain. And it took my doctors about 5 days to finally figure out my pain management. And in between that, so in those 5 days, I'm getting like a weird cocktail of like morphine, oxycodone, and this and that, and just all at the same time. And I can only, and it felt so good. And it's like, I can only imagine what that shit feels like when I'm not in pain, when there's actually nothing wrong with me.
Well, I can assure you that weed doesn't feel like that.
Well, no, obviously not.
But it's still pretty grand.
Well, the second thing I have to say is, and I'm going to say this on air.
What?
So that you can call me out on it if I deny it. I am in a better position now to be negotiated with than I ever have been in my entire life.
OMG.
Because I'm not experiencing severe nausea, but I am experiencing nausea.
Huh.
I'm not experiencing any real pain, but I do ache. You know what I mean? My stomach hurts all the time.
Sure.
From hunger, but I can't actually eat anything.
Wait, you can't eat because of the regimen, because of the medical regimen, or do you just don't have the appetite?
I mean, the appetite. I'm sure if I could, force food down my throat.
Oh, if only there were something that would make you hungry.
So I'm in a better position now in my life than I ever have been or ever will be to discuss the possibility of some kind of cannabis solution.
Wow. You know what? That said, let me just say, since you're just putting stuff out there, and I'm just putting stuff out there, I've got a fresh batch of some Crusher brownies in my fridge right now. And I'm not kidding. They're way better than that stuff I made over Christmas. I made these, and it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. I swear to God. We'll put on Pink Floyd's first side of Dark Side of the Moon. We'll cue it up with The Wizard of Oz, and you'll get to catch up on all those college experiences that you missed out by being a teetotaling little theater dork.
We could talk about that off
and we're going to.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Anyway.
But I do want to say as a public service announcement.
Yeah.
If you are over the age of 30 and under the age of 40, please, for the love of all that is good and wholesome in this world, go to the hospital, go to your doctor, go to a clinic, get yourself checked. It is a very, very simple procedure. If any male is hearing my voice and I can get one of them to go to the clinic to catch it early, then I feel like I've done that. What I'm going through is worth something. Please go out there, get yourself checked. It's a simple procedure. It's curable. It's treatable. If you catch it early, it's almost nothing. But please go get yourself checked.
That is $1 million worth of free advice for you gentlemen out there. Please. Please get yourself screened for testicular cancer. Colon cancer while you're at it for some of us who are of heightened ages.
Well, yeah. If you are approaching 40 or above or 35 and above, go get your colon checked.
Yep.
It's not that hard.
Nope.
It's a very, very simple procedure.
It's kind of fun.
It's
what it is.
Here's the thing, folks. Cancer was the last thing on the list that I thought would ever be a part of my life. I literally, on the long list of things that I thought would sort of derail me, cancer wasn't even on the list. In fact, I thought I would be dead by asthma by now. So it's do yourself a favor, go to the hospital. Get checked. If you're fine, then you never have to worry about it. But if there's something there, all cancer, and here's the truth of it, all cancer, doesn't matter what it is, all cancers can be cured and can be treated if you catch it early. The longer the wait, the harder it is. It's that simple. So.
And that's your PSA from Nelson Lugo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is that testicular cancer is about as ubiquitous as breast cancer.
True.
And it's just that nobody's really talking about it in the way that breast cancer is. And, you know, guys got to start talking about it. We got to talk about our balls. We got to talk about, you know, if they're healthy or not. And because your testicular cancer will turn into lymphoma. And that is not something you want.
No.
No. But that's it. Yeah. Nelson has cancer and I'm doing my best to, you know, treat it. And
well, all of that said, I think it's unfortunate that you've had an unpleasant month dealing with all of this.
Thank you.
But I can't even express how grateful I am that you are still with us.
Well,
and that this was caught early enough in time that I wouldn't have to be having a much more difficult conversation with a bunch of strangers. So,
well, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, the truth of the matter is that, you know, I caught it early.
Yeah.
And that's good news. And I'm gonna hold on to that, and you know, six months from now, like I said, this will just be an unpleasant memory.
Oh no, 6 months from now you'll be dead, but it'll be from a sword fight in which I win. Let the record show that too. Look, I placed the stones in the circle of 12. I recited the curse of the ancients, and that's what I got. Nelson Lugo, dead in 6 months by my blade.
You know what? That's actually on my list of things that were gonna derail me.
Cool. Now I'm assuming that while you were in the hospital, you passed your time, you had to entertain yourself.
Oh, fuck yes. I want to talk about this. I bought myself a Kindle Fire, HD, about, I guess going on 2 months now. Mm-hmm. And, little did I know how useful this little thing was going to be. I started reading Dune on it and I'm 33% of the way through. I'll get through it, guys. Don't worry.
We'll see.
And then I landed in the hospital and I discovered Comixology. Oh, Comixology.
You had been one of those guys who'd said many times, I don't read single issues anymore. I only read trades.
Well,
so you didn't know what was going on in any of your favorite books until, say, several months after six issues had been finished.
Well, I mean, I wasn't indignant about it. It's more of a practical thing. Like, I live in a tiny place.
I only used the indignant voice to show that that was speaking as a different character.
I see. So you hear
you were doing it for financial reasons. You were like, I just don't have the money.
Well, money and space.
And space, yeah exactly.
It's mostly space. I just don't have the space to collect single issues anymore.
But you'll pick up the trades when they go. So I was constantly, now I just, you know, in the past year I'd start and got back into comics and got back into single issues. So I'm reading all these things and I'd always want to be like, oh my God, Lugo, the things that happened this month in Batman, you'd be like, I read trades. So then I'd have to sit there and wait for you to catch up like a whole season later.
But Comixology on my Kindle
has changed that for you.
Oh my God, it is the greatest thing in the world. Being in that hospital, as lovely as everybody was treating me, as great as the care as I was getting, was still very lonely and very can be overbearing at times emotionally. Comixology allowed me to read all of my favorite comic books, single issues, anytime I wanted. Anytime.
Which I imagine is kind of a complicated thing because on one hand, look, we all know that your religion, the closest thing you have to religion is Batman.
Fuck yeah.
So now having your Kindle Fire and having tons of free time as you're just in a hospital eating cream corn, that you are able to catch up on all of your Batman books. Yeah. So here on one hand, you're like, oh, thank God, I have this device that delivers all individual issues of Batman to me.
Yes.
In my hospital bed, I can catch up.
Yes.
On the other hand, tragedy strikes your Batman universe. So that's a lot for you to process at once.
Yeah, I had a very emotional 20 days. It was, again, I hate this phrase. I hate it so much. But it was very much an emotional roller coaster on many, many levels.
And I kind of feel that appropriately sets up this month's guest.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'll tell you what we're going to do.
What are we going to do?
We're going to take a quick break.
Sure.
We're going to come back.
Right.
We're going to bring in this month's guest.
Right.
And we're going to talk about the material that you read in your hospital bed.
Fuck yeah.
And all things related to those particular stories. How's that sound?
Sounds fantastic.
Wonderful. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back in a moment. Gentlemen, our guest on the podcast this month is the site editor of Newsarama.com, back making his second appearance with us. Please welcome to the program, Lucas Siegel.
Woo-woo! The crowd goes crazy!
The crowd goes crazy. The crowd is Nelson Lugo. Oh, I heard it over there. I heard the roar of the crowd.
Welcome back,
Take
Lucas.
Take it off!
No, it's not that kind of podcast. It's not that kind of podcast. You've already been here. You should know the rules by now.
Welcome back to the show, Lucas.
Yes, my pants are already off.
Oh, dear.
I know the rules.
So how do you want to get into this, buddy?
I think when I asked Lucas to come back on the show, I believe in the text I said, Lucas, we need to talk about Damian. A lot has happened. You know, well, the last time you were here, it was before Death of the Family had launched.
Right.
Although clearly you already knew how it was going to play out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mentioned this a couple of times. You know. Interesting. Some of the teasers, some of the little wonderful little nuggets that you dropped the last time you were here are starting to finally show up and play out. So I think it's just great that you're here to help us wrap up that storyline and talk about what's next for not only the Batman franchise but DC in general. So.
Podcast has continuity now.
It's true. You know, and so we're not the ones delivering spoilers. We're going to assume that if you're listening to this, you have been following the Batman books recently. If not, a major event has happened following Death of the Family. And since I don't want to be the one to deliver spoilers, Lucas, why don't you tell the audience what recently happened?
Well, you know, it's so funny about not wanting to give spoilers to this particular storyline, since DC announced the actual event in question on the Monday before the book came out, and then put it on the cover of the comic.
Yeah.
So, but not necessarily a spoiler, since you couldn't buy the issue anywhere for over a week, it seemed, because it sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
So, very clearly, DC wanted you to know, going into Batman Inc. number 8, that Damian Wayne was dying. And he did. He did actually die in Batman Inc. number 8.
Yep.
And according to Grant Morrison, he's dead. He's dead at the very least for the rest of Grant Morrison's run. And anyone hoping for a happy ending for Damian Wayne is going to be sorely disappointed.
I'm both happy and sad about that. One, I'm happy because I don't really like the MacGuffin of the Lazarus Pit. I think it's overused.
That will be dealt with in the next issue.
Good.
What?
What do you mean dealt with? Well, hold on. Let me finish my thought. Holy crap.
Batman Inc. number 9 will deal with the Lazarus Pit problem.
I think the Lazarus Pit problem is
as
just,
well as the cloning problem.
Ooh, yeah. Good. Oh, good. All right. Good, that was going to be the next one.
That was another sort of the Batman mythos has always gotten away with some really questionable storylines using Lazarus Pits. And it's just one of those It's the Deus Ex Machina of Batman, and I wanted to make sure that was out of the way. And I'm glad Grant Morrison is putting a cap on that.
Yep.
It makes me sad though, because I fucking love Damian Wayne. I loved him so much. It's like he's a little psychopath who could, you know. He's the little terror that you want to root for.
I said when I started reading the New 52, and specifically when I started reading the Batman and Robin book, that title specifically, which is my favorite of the Batman books currently.
Yeah, Pete right. Tomasi has done an amazing job. And remember that Pete Tomasi was editing Batman when Grant introduced Damian Wayne.
Oh, really? In the original continuity?
So the original, Damian Wayne is Grant Morrison's baby. And originally, the first person that he would even allow to write him other than himself was
Tomasi?
Was Pete Tomasi.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Hand off the reins, yeah.
Yeah.
I said the Batman and Robin book has been my favorite of the Batman books of the New 52. And Damian Wayne, I have said controversially, is my favorite Robin to date. I feel in the short amount of time that he was given in this New 52.
I don't know. Dick Grayson puts out more on a date, so he's a better one to date.
You know, Damian's 12. I'm sorry.
So you like dating 12-year-olds?
No, I'm saying I don't want a 12-year-old to put out on a date.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up for our listeners. Thank you.
God, I'm so glad I said that out loud in case there was any question.
Finally.
Yeah, Tim Drake is still my number one, although
you know
the
what?
New 52 Tim Drake is...
The New 52 Tim Drake, it's not that I don't like him. I don't know... There isn't much of him there.
It's that I don't like him.
I don't know if he's not well written or he doesn't have much of a personality stand on his own.
Yes, yes.
I just don't know. Dick Grayson is fantastic. I love Dick Grayson in the New 52. Even Jason Todd. I love Jason Todd in New 52. Damian Wayne is fucking fantastic in the New 52. Well, not anymore.
Yeah, he was.
But Tim Drake,
he's very nebulous. There hasn't been anything. Yet.
Yeah, he's like he's too milquetoast. He's too homogeneous. He blends in too much. Maybe there's one too many Robins. I don't know, but
well, there goes that problem.
I
don't disagree with you at all, though, Schaefer. I think Damian Wayne has been a wholly unique Robin compared to anyone else that's ever held the role, and has to be because of his parentage. Because he became Robin with another Batman. And I think that's a big part of his, you know, the fact that he really started operating as Robin full time when Dick Grayson was under the cowl. And that's how it kicked off.
Right.
And it was, that was Batman and Robin. It was Dick Grayson and it was Damian Wayne. And I will miss their relationship even more than I'll miss Damian's relationship.
Absolutely.
With Bruce
I was just mentioning it earlier. The dynamic between Grayson and Damian is so beautiful. It's a wonderful, like, older brother, younger brother relationship. And particularly like in that storyline where Damian set out to beat up all the Robins to prove a point, and he marched up to Dick, and Dick's like, "Dude, we're not gonna fight. Here, just take the cowl. Just I don't care. you're okay. Don't worry about it."
It feels like the writer of Batman Inc.
Grant Morrison.
That's all right. There's a lot of names to remember.
This is the culmination of Grant Morrison's full 6 years with the Batman character.
I feel he missed that relationship too, because there was that line of dialogue that was placed in Batman Inc. number 8 where Damian says to Grayson, "You know, Grayson, you were my favorite partner of all."
Yeah, that was the tearjerker moment for me.
Yeah. Because I'm reading that and I'm like, oh my God, that's really sweet. Damian grown up enough that he said something sweet. He's saying goodbye. And I'm like, oh great, because I know in 12 pages something really bad is happening. look at the humanity on Damian Wayne all of a sudden. He's really grown since he was that psychopath in the first few issues of Batman and Robin. And now, fuck.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that he's dead. Because Batman needs, like, the one outside of his parents, which is beyond his control.
Right.
He needs the one that was completely within his control and his responsibility to drive him, which is what Jason Todd was, but now no longer is.
Right.
Damian Wayne now fills the role that Jason Todd once did.
And these last few issues of Batman Inc., 4, maybe 5, they haven't said specifically, because originally it was supposed to be a 12-issue run, but they haven't said specifically whether Grant's ending it with 12 or 13 yet, because like Action Comics, where he needed an extra issue, very possible that he'll do that again, but these last few issues are going to be Batman in his absolute darkest hour, and he will be on a rampage. And where he has always been very careful about balancing his need for vengeance versus full-on revenge, he's going to be out for revenge now.
Yikes.
That's I feel like they're already starting to paint that beautifully with Batman and Robin 18, the silent issue, which was also
so
a tearjerker.
Good
but
Lord,
those
yeah.
moments where he's sort of seeing these ghosts of Damian everywhere and these memories that he had.
Yep.
Sliding down the pole and whatnot. He still sees him there. And then, you know, flips a switch and then just goes into this violent rampage and just starts beating the shit out of just common street thugs.
Is
a beautiful... It's the best thing that can come from this, for me, for the writing of Batman, is to see him go into this really, really dark place.
Oh, absolutely. And it's going to put the Al Ghul family into a very different area than they have been, because they've always been this kind of nebulous. It's interesting. I'm going to very oddly compare them to Reverse Flash. When Reverse Flash first came back in time, his whole goal was to push Barry Allen to be a better hero. And he thought that by killing Barry's mom, he was the one leading him on the path to being a hero. He thought that all the torture he put him through,
right,
assembling the Rogues, that this was all stuff that was going to make Barry Allen better as the Flash. And that was his ultimate goal, was he wanted Barry Allen to be the best hero ever.
By being the worst villain ever.
Right. Right. And Ra's al Ghul was always kind of that for Batman in a way, too. He was, you know, depending on your origin story, training him in some way, but he's always been somewhat involved in his training in the early years, and his whole challenge I loved the Ra's al Ghul that was really established by Batman the Animated Series.
Yes.
By Bruce Timm and, yes. and Paul Dini, because, you know, it was all just a series of tests and challenges, and all he was trying to do was go, look, I already know that you're the best in the world. I know that you can supplant me, you can take over, you can make the world better than I could ever hope to. And I'm pushing you to do that. So that's what Ra's always did. Talia took it so much more personally.
Yeah.
And Talia just had that one rejection, and she has not let it go.
Woman scorned.
Yep.
And it's interesting how her whole plan to basically use Damian as nothing but a tool to get Batman into the Ra's al Ghul family completely backfires.
Mother, call off your monster.
Yeah, completely.
Okay, stop.
Absolutely backfires, where Damian embraces Bruce Wayne's way, embraces his teachings
and his ethic and his morals, yeah,
and completely turns on his mother and the years of League of Assassins training. And Talia will not let that stand. She would rather destroy her progeny and destroy Gotham in the process than to let something she created be twisted by Bruce's morals, I guess, in some weird way.
And I'll tell you, this is no inside information or anything. This is genuine speculation. But I fear for Dick Grayson from Talia's point of view.
Really?
Because why? Damian would never have embraced the Bat family's way of life if it wasn't for Dick Grayson. I don't think Damian would have ever become the young man that he was starting to become if he had been under Bruce's tutelage that entire time. That year off of Bruce being lost in the time stream. Comics.
Wait, hold on. Is that part of the 52 continuity, though?
That's still there, yeah.
Okay.
Dick Grayson was Batman for a year.
Got it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Indeterminate amount of time, but he was Batman for a while.
Yes.
With Damian as his Robin.
Yeah.
And you take that out of the equation and Damian never gets to this point.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, the only thing Grant really said is that every character that's been in Batman Inc. to this point, any of these international Batmen, anyone who's ever worn the cowl will appear in these last four or five issues.
Wow.
And will be a major part of the events that take place.
Just pure speculation, why do you think Dick Grayson is going to be threatened at this point?
Because he's the one that fucked up Talia's plan. I mean, Talia's plan was to throw Damian in here as this cog in Bruce's life and use him to drive Bruce to the dark side rather than driving Damian to the light side. It was Nightwing. It was Dick Grayson.
It was Grayson's mentorship that actually gave him a little humanity.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he resisted all of Bruce's stuff. He was such a shit in those first few issues.
Oh yeah.
But
where he was originally going to die. He was originally going to die in that first four issue arc of Batman and Son. He was.
Oh, that's right.
He was going to just be created, be there, die, and that was going to be it. And it was the illustrious editor who said, "No, let's keep him around for a while and let's talk about it." And then Grant decided to keep him around, and We had a few years. We had a few years with the great Damian Wayne.
So do you think... So, all right. So you're saying that Grant Morrison has said if he has anything to say about it, there will be no Lazarus Pit writing him back in.
Yeah, no clones.
No clones, because look, the Leviathan clone.
He promised he will directly take care of the Lazarus Pit and cloning questions immediately.
In these next four issues.
Yes, immediately.
So his run ends at 12.
And then, yeah, it's scheduled to run
or does
to end
the book,
at 12.
Does it the might, book end at 12?
It might end at 12 or 13. They haven't given an exact time frame yet.
Well, I don't think the book's going to end. I mean, but that story arc is going to end.
It could. The book could end. I mean, it's... Batman Inc. has never been written by anyone but Grant Morrison.
Oh, true.
And it was fulfilled
for that one plot line.
Right. The idea of this international coalition of Batman is something that... I mean, with Death of the Family dovetailing into this,
mm-hmm.
where Batman ultimately says, while trying to defend his need for a family... He ultimately says, I'm still the only one I can fully trust. It's just me. But I need them. But I can't actually trust them. And he pushed them all away. And they all went away because of that. And then, you know, now if he has this massive personal failing, the most personal failing he's ever had.
Sure.
If you follow Batman... chances are he's going to push away the rest of that whole Batman Inc. crew.
Well, but I mean, but then again, it's not going to be that difficult because the rest of the Batman family is kind of avoiding him like the plague right now.
Right.
That was kind of one of my favorite parts of Death of the Family was at the very end. You saw the reaction shots of everybody when Joker made him admit in front of all of them that he's the only one that he trusts in spite of having all of these young people that have committed their lives to his cause. To watch in the epilogue, everybody reacting to him, they're all like, no, I'm cool. I'm just going to hang out by myself right now. Yeah. They all had to kind of process that at the end.
Yeah, even,
was really kind of the most powerful moment of the whole thing for me.
Yeah, even Dick, who is the most commutative with Bruce,
right.
is just sending him a text. Like, look, I'm good right now. I need to do a thing. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, and Dick has an interesting turn of events here coming up in Nightwing now, where he's Tony Zucco. He finds out that Tony Zucco is still alive, and he's running off to Chicago to hunt him down. So he's kind of going off on his own little revenge path now, too. And
it's getting pretty intense in Nightwing right now.
He, of course, is intensely depressed about losing Damian as well.
Yeah.
Tony Zucco is responsible for the death of his parents?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Making sure that was...
Yes, that is still the case, yeah. So that'll be interesting to see him...
You mean it wasn't Tommy Lee Jones?
...work out his...
Well, Tommy Lee Jones playing someone named Tony Zucco. Oh, no, I guess
No, it was Tommy Lee Jones playing someone named Harvey Dent.
I blocked that movie out.
Okay, anyway. Good.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Okay, so Batman, or rather the Batman titles, are in good hands, at least for the short term. We'll see what happens when Grant Morrison finally takes his leave of those titles. And see where that picks off.
Well,
that one title.
Right. Grant has that one title. We're going to see some very, very different directions for the rest of the Bat family, where Batman and Robin is going to start cycling through the other Bat family members. So it'll be Batman and Red Hood, Batman and Red Robin, Batman and Nightwing, Batman and Catwoman.
Interesting.
Batman and Batgirl. So for the next few months, it's going to have a different title every month and continue to deal with some of the fallout and with what the changed relationship is now with Bruce and these other people. Now that he had the death of the family events, he had the death of his son, the literal death of his son. So that book is still going to be one that's... Hopefully we'll stay on the top of people's read list.
I want to ask you a question.
Oh dear,
fella,
he's putting on a serious face now.
I'm going to ask you for some of your own personal speculation / some of your own insider info, as much of as you can give. But first, I would like you to tell our audience, in case they're not familiar, in case they missed out on a few issues that set this up back in Detective maybe last year, who is Harper Row?
So this is
that was the detective. That wasn't in Batman. That wasn't detective, right? When Harper
No, she was in Batman. Yeah.
I thought it was in detective. Yep. Anyway, but she was a character that was introduced last year for a moment and then kind of let go. And suddenly she's been reintroduced in Batman this month.
Weird.
Yeah, let's talk about her. Who is Harper Row, Lucas?
So here's something. Here's something that has not appeared on Newsarama.
Wait, is this the big?
Here's something kind of big.
Oh shit!
Should we whisper?
When Harper Row was created, it was intended for her to be the next Robin. She is no longer the top candidate for the next Robin, and okay. In fact, I can pretty much say she will not be the next Robin.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. But she was created for that purpose.
She was originally created for that purpose.
It's pretty clear. I mean, you don't...
Scott Snyder has now decided to do a year-long story set in the past, Batman Year Zero. And this is... It's meant to kind of clear up some of the timing of Batman's history in the New 52.
Okay.
So it's an 11-issue story that starts in June... And that means he has no time or space or room to introduce Harper Row as the new Robin, and she will not be.
Will we see her again at least?
And most likely, the new Robin, he or she will appear first in the pages of your favorite comic, Schaefer, of Batman and Robin.
Oh, I would hope so. I would hope that the new Robin appears.
Which, right.
In a title called exactly. Batman and Robin.
Makes a certain level of sense.
So I need to start like reading each issue with like a fine-tuned comb.
And he or she has probably already appeared in comics.
Oh, son of a bitch. Wait, hold on. Do you mean in the New 52 continuity?
In the new 52, yes.
God damn it.
Wait, I got this.
So,
Schaefer's putting his thinking hat on.
Across, you know, Batman Inc., Batman and Robin.
Oh,
Squire would just be great, wouldn't she?
No, Squire would not be great.
I think Squire would be really interesting.
Squire is the British version of Robin.
Basically, the British Robin, right? Also just died in Batman Inc.
Yes, like her. I don't know if I like her enough to be a Robin. I've never actually seen her do anything other than like, you know, co-pilot things. But I get, you know, but
you should
I don't
read
know.
The excellent Knight and Squire miniseries by Paul Cornell from a couple years back.
All right.
It's really funny and extremely fucking British.
Oh.
Like and he completely acknowledges that and even includes a page, the last page of every issue is just like a British glossary.
Nice.
That explains everything that
words.
He said. And nice. Some of these things are like three columns, like 9-point font.
I will definitely check it out.
But that will make you like Squire a lot more. I think Squire would be interesting simply because, you know, they both lost their other half.
Right,
right. It would complete some kind of symmetry.
And
there.
She's fully trained.
That's true.
She's already part of the company.
Right, right. So
yeah, I don't know. It just seems
it'd
too
be an
easy.
Interesting candidate.
It seems too easy a choice. I guess is my problem with it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Harper Row seems like too easy of a choice.
And who knows if Squire will even survive? You know,
that's true. Right?
Who does know?
There are at least four issues left of Batman Inc. where. There are going to be more casualties. So,
at the very least, yeah.
You know, I liked the setup that they were doing with this character of Harper Row. I liked it when they did it back when I wasn't suspecting that they were setting up a new Robin, and I liked when she reappeared in Batman.
It's interesting that Tim Drake has never actually gone by the name Robin in the New 52, isn't it? He's always just been Red Robin.
Well, that sure is interesting, isn't it?
Well, hold on. You know what? If they did that,
and people were pretty.
I may like Tim Drake more.
People were pretty upset when they found
you know,
out that Tim Drake
he needs
Drake
to be fleshed out more.
He
needs to have more of a personality.
Gosh, maybe they could give him some more stage time.
Yeah.
So that'd be an interesting candidate.
All right.
I just want to say my thing about Harper Row.
Okay.
Is that like I like the setup that they were doing with it. I like the idea that they were kind of. teasing me into thinking that there was going to be a woman was going to be Robin. I like that idea a lot.
Harper Row is going to have a place in the Batman family.
That's great.
At some point,
I liked seeing her show up in Batman 18. But I didn't like it because I was like, it's too soon. Let him brood.
Yeah.
Let him be dark and violent for a year. Don't give us a new Robin so quickly because it's not
believable. And did you notice that she said that too? She said, I know I'm not ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to keep working.
He punched her through a fence.
That was awesome.
Yes, he did.
He broke her nose.
That was awesome. To teach her a lesson.
Even I was reading that on the train. I was like, God, Bruce, dude.
Well, do you think a criminal is going to be any nicer? Come on.
Well, it's a teenage girl, man.
Oh, yeah. Like some drug-addled gangbanger is going to be kinder.
Well, I thought it was too soon. I was like, don't give us this yet. If you're going to kill off my favorite Robin,
well,
like, give him some time to fall apart.
Right.
Like, for real. Yeah. I mean, for years, he got to use Jason Todd as, like, an excuse for all of his, like, dark episodes.
Right.
And, well, they took that away. I don't know if I've talked to you about my feelings about Jason Todd, but he should not be. Jason Todd should have always remained this death in his past.
He has the best resurrection story ever.
No, there is no such...
Superboy Prime punched the walls of continuity. Superboy Prime punched the walls of continuity.
I know. Look, there's no
to bring back Jason Todd.
Somebody got paid to write that. I just want someone to hear.
Somebody got paid to write that and then was promoted to chief creative officer of DC Entertainment.
Oh. Look, I just want to say there's no such thing as best resurrection story.
Jeff.
That's like saying nicest racist. You know. There's no reason he should have ever been back. There's no reason the Red Hood should exist. I don't like Jason Todd being around in this universe. It makes me miserable. It makes me want my money back from 1987 when I was a kid and I called that 900 number and voted for him to die. He shouldn't be around. And if he is, he should be a skeleton. He was in the ground for a long time.
Well, sliding scale.
Yeah. All right.
Fuck Lazarus Pitts and I'm out.
True. I hate the fucking Lazarus Pitts. All right, look, I think we've beat the whole Batman Damian thing to death.
Oh no, I've got lots more.
No, we're gonna move on. We're gonna move on because there's so much more happening in the DC universe. There's so much more news, there's so much more stuff. I know.
And let's be fair, nobody gives a shit about Superior Spider-Man, so let's keep this in the DC universe.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, come on.
What I meant was I don't give a shit.
Right.
Superior has been pretty good, actually.
Schaefer and I don't give a shit. We've just told you Schaefer and I don't give a shit.
You
can keep talking. We're going to edit this out.
This whole part
is going to be beeped.
It can't go on long.
You can't have freaking Ghost Peter Parker going, oh, God, if only I could have taken control sooner. For some reason, I now read Ghost Peter Parker in Jerry Seinfeld's voice. And I think you'll enjoy the book a lot more if you start doing that.
All right, maybe I'll give it a shot. No, I'm not going to give it a shot.
Doc Ock, what are you doing? Come on!
Mr. Siegel.
You made me a promise about responsibility.
Mr. Siegel, we're gonna talk
What's
about...
What's the deal with Otto killing people in my body?
we're gonna move on from this. We're going to talk about Action Comics. We're going to talk about the pending... possible shenanigans that are happening over at the DC offices.
DC Comics will now be named CF Comics.
Okay. Jeez. We're going to talk about... You brought with you today a major news bomb you're going to share with our listeners and nowhere else. So the only people going to get this information are Epic Podcast listeners.
The first part of that was the major news bomb number one was that Harper Row is... not going to be Robin.
Okay.
Okay.
So I suspected
that was that. Was,
I suspected that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, that was major news bomb number two.
Okay.
No, it's the situation currently. We have had direct sources that wish to remain anonymous, so that they can continue working in the comic book industry.
Fair enough.
That have had dealings with DC Comics recently that are kind of scary for creators because creators are no longer really being asked to create there. They're simply asked to be kind of typer monkeys is actually what one of the people said, that they are being asked to be typewriting monkeys. And
so
they're being very guided along.
Oh, I see.
But the big problem is that they're being made to do work over and over again, and they're not being paid extra for that. And that's a scary thing in the comic book industry. The idea that now these writers are having their pitches approved, they're having a story arc approved, they're writing entire scripts worth of art are being done, and then they're being told from three levels up in editorial that they need to redo this and they need to change this. And it can be as much as one source said as many as 11 pages. That's more than half of the 20 page reading limit on most DC books right now.
And so, I guess my basic question is, are these changes because, you know, the higher ups have a particular direction they want these stories to go, or, I mean, are they following, obviously it's not like, you know, some sort of, you know, no, I can only imagine that they're not edits like, you know, Superboy can't, you know, swim underwater or whatever.
Right.
You know, I can only imagine that these are sweeping changes
to the
stories.
They're specific story beats the characters now have to have that are being thrown in after work is already done. And that's the big problem. And it's, from what we're hearing, the lower tier editors, the editors, you know, the assistants and associates that are actually dealing directly with talent, are frustrated as well, because it's really hard for them to be told by their bosses and their bosses' bosses, okay, well, you need to make this change happen with your talent. Go.
Fuck.
So it's an interesting situation over there right now. Hopefully it's something that can be fixed. And the two very public walk-offs in the last week alone of Andy Diggle off of Action Comics, and then following that up with Tony Daniel, his artist, also leaving the book after three issues. He says that was the plan, but when they initially announced them as the new team, they announced them as the new ongoing team.
Yeah, they didn't announce it for like a limited
run. They didn't say like Tony Daniel is only going to be on it.
That's just diplomacy that he's using now, because he doesn't want a bad mouth on his way out.
Right, right. And he says that he's helping out on a major book for DC later on down the line in the summer, which is probably very possible that he'll be working on Trinity War, which is the big crossover, the first big crossover for New 52.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Is it just
a sense of just very sort of like overbearing micromanagement, essentially?
Yeah, basically. And, you know, Rob Liefeld, love him or hate him, he was the first one that brought this to light, and he was very honest about when he left. He was working on three books when he left, and he just completely dropped them. He had like three more issues solicited at that point, and he just dropped. And he walked away, and he said, I can't do this anymore. Wow. I can't keep rewriting and redrawing things over and over and over again, not getting paid for it, and continue to do that. It's not right for me. It's obviously not – what I'm doing isn't right for the characters according to DC Comics, so I need to leave.
Right.
And that's pretty much what Andy Diggle said when he announced he was leaving Action Comics, that it's, you know, creative differences and his vision of what he wants to do with Superman isn't what DC wants him to do with Superman right now.
What?
And then Josh Fielkov said the same thing with Green Lantern Corps and Red Lanterns. I mean, this is a guy that has really grinded in the indie world, and he had the very critically acclaimed iVampire that didn't sell very well. They kept it going for quite a while. DC seemed to really like him, and they wanted to keep it going.
Critics
and they wanted to keep him around. And he gets this major assignment of two of the Green Lantern books and leaves before issue one's even written. So it's an interesting situation. It's something that people need to talk about. It can't, you know, and this is, again, something that Rob brought up online on Twitter. He just said, you know, this is not a normal thing. This is not a business as usual situation, and people just aren't talking about it. People are accepting it as if it is a business as usual, and it can't be, because ultimately it will start to reflect. It'll start to reflect in sales, and then when those sales go down, you know, the writers and artists that do put up with all this are going to get fired.
Yeah. Yeah.
and they'll be basically getting fired for putting up with this mentality and this
business. Where do you think this is coming from? I mean, obviously, is it coming from straight from the top, or is it just somewhere in the, like, where are these calls being made? And
I think the problem right now is that you have several people that are at the top. So there are several people right now that could be considered at the top of DC Comics or DC Entertainment.
I see.
And you have Diane Nelson, who's the actual president.
Got it.
And who's having to work directly with Warner Brothers. And you have Jeff Johns, who's the chief creative officer, writing 3 comics a month, also working with all of DC's properties in video games, animation, and live action.
Oh, good gravy.
So he's doing like 6 jobs right now. And then you've got Jim Lee and Dan DiDio as co-publishers trying to figure out how they can continue to move the DC universe forward in a way that makes it more attractive to DC Entertainment and to Warner Brothers.
Right.
And then you've got Bob Harris as editor-in-chief trying to actually control the day-to-day. And you have Bobby Chase as executive editor trying to actually keep the stories intact and
coherent.
Yeah. And then you've got 5 group editors, and you've got 15 associate and assistant editors, and then you've got the writers and artists that are actually trying to create these monthly enjoyable stories. So it's
do you think it's coming from Warner Brothers corporate?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Or is it coming from like Ms. Nelson?
And that's kind of the question, and nobody can seem to figure it out right now. And that's something that we're personally trying to do some digging on and trying to figure out.
Right.
And I think it really is.
At the end of the day, who has the call? Like, who has the final say in what goes on there?
That's a wonderful question.
Good gravy.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, because, you know, and I think that everybody has the absolute best of intentions right now as well.
Which is
something that even the creators that spoke to us anonymously said. Everyone seems like they have the best of intentions, and they're trying to align things properly, and they are working with the corporate structure, and they are working with trying to make things more appealing for the mass audiences so that we can tie them into, you know, I mean, what is Warner doing with these properties right now? They have Man of Steel coming out.
Well, yeah, and there's new speculation about how they're going to screw up a Justice League movie on the internet every day.
Every day.
There's a new writer attached to it, a new director, a new plan attached to it of how they're going to unleash these movies.
Yeah.
And then every day there's a new plan announced. Every day
I heard they're just going to do the Justice League Farm League now. We're going to have Green Lamprey.
Nuts. Well, I mean,
project's never going to get made.
Other than
if it keeps continuing the way it has the past 3 years, there was a script once for a Justice League movie.
There have been several scripts for a Justice League movie.
All right,
and that's like inside of just the last decade.
In the past month, there was talk that like they were going to like put it in Chris Nolan's hands. They were going to have him like oversee the whole like Justice League project. But
no,
nobody believes that.
I can't imagine he would even.
I mean, he is producing the Zack Snyder.
He loved working with Zack Snyder on Man of Steel. I think if you get the two of them together, and then you get Nolan's writing team of his brother and David Goyer, if you got them all involved and you just sat all of them down and said, "All right, you tell me what would make a good Justice League movie,"
mm-hmm.
I think that they could do it. And I think that is something that I think that rumor definitely stemmed from some level of truth, in that it's definitely something that like the corporate structure, and if not even the corporate structure, then like the DC Entertainment guys, the guys like Jeff Johns and Diane Nelson are probably definitely going like, okay, well, let's see. We have one guy that's done things really well for us. That's Chris Nolan. So, and he has this really great creative team that he works really well with. on tons of award-winning major blockbuster
yes,
movies.
Yes.
Maybe if we can bring them all together. So we'll see. It's disappointing though, man. I mean, just think about things like we're literally. I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm super excited about the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Oh, dear.
We're going to see fucking Rocket Raccoon and Groot on the big screen before Wonder Woman.
Yes, that's that. There's really no excuse for that. And I can't agree enough. A standalone Wonder Woman movie should have been out years ago.
A talking raccoon and a giant talking tree that can only say, "I am Groot."
Isn't there a carrot in there too?
Will be. Oh, no, you're thinking that's DC. That's,
oh, right. Yeah. Never mind. No.
Captain Carrot is Captain Carrot, DC. Yeah. He's in Threshold right now.
Of course he is.
But yeah, right. it's almost like the Guardians of the Galaxy picture is Marvel just thumbing their nose at Warner Brothers and being like, really? Because we'll get this out and we will make money off of this and you guys will still be dicking around with trying to figure out how to make Flash and Wonder Woman work together in a picture.
I don't get it. I don't get it. And here's the thing about DC. DC is at probably at no other point in history are they capable of just writing a check to any goddamn success they want right now. You know, and they just seem to be fumbling over themselves trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
That no one's taking the initiative to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And
well, in addition to those four Justice League scripts, there have been at least detailed treatments of Flash, Shazam, Wonder Woman,
Martian Manhunter?
Lobo, actually.
Lobo?
Oh,
Lobo,
I heard Lobo about a Lobo project.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so there have been all these treatments and they're done. Like they can tap somebody and go, "Here's the treatment, write a script."
Yeah.
And they're just not. And it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating as a fan and, you know, to see the way that Marvel Studios built themselves up. And they built themselves up off of Iron Man. People, nobody gave a fuck about Iron Man 10 years ago.
Yep. Nobody. I didn't.
And if you can do that with Iron Man on one side of the fence, how can you not make an amazing Wonder Woman movie? Like, how what?
I don't get it. What?
Everybody knows who Wonder Woman is.
Everybody wants a Wonder Woman movie.
Right.
I do. I totally do. I think.
But hey, movies starring, especially action movies starring females, don't make any money. Hunger Games. Oh, wait.
Right. Oh, well.
You got any, before we wrap this up, you have any anything else that you can drop on us that will get you fired?
Any, give us three big.
You don't have to give us three. Just give us something.
Three big things that you
don't,
can't
you
talk
you're
about.
You're so
go.
Greedy, Lugo. Give us three big things you can't talk about.
Yeah, go.
I feel like he's already given us one thing he probably shouldn't have talked about. But
well,
I'll
no.
Think,
I mean,
well,
see, you know, no. It's
all I'm doing is reporting other people's words. None of those words were my own.
Right.
Oh, and also, this is what you've told us is entirely off the record.
Oh, great. Right. Oh, perfect.
No one listens to this show, so don't worry about it.
That's so true.
Oh, man. There's going to be five really knowledgeable nerds out there, though.
Yeah, but those are loyal five. They're not going to say anything to anyone. Give us some scoops. Give us some major scoops.
The new Star Wars animated series is much further along than people think.
Oh, they've kept that shrouded under secrecy. Because I heard Clone Wars is ending.
Yes. In addition, maybe related, maybe not, but Dave Filoni, the supervising director of Clone Wars, is still working for Lucasfilm.
Oh, that's great.
Interesting.
What
do you know about this new
animated series? Those are some fun little things.
Do you know where this, in what point in the timeline this new animated series might take place? Oh, you're struggling with this. I can see it on your face, Siegel.
The main reason why Clone Wars ceased production is to streamline the message and focus people on Episode 7.
Gotcha.
Got it. Say no more. Say no more. Got it. Done. Done.
Oh my God, I just got really excited.
I got chills a little bit.
But yeah, there are like... as many as, I think, somewhere in the realm of 15 to 18 episodes of Clone Wars that have been either completely finished or almost completely finished. So those will still get to the fans somehow.
Right.
They don't know whether they're going to start airing them as like three episodes altogether as TV movies, just airing the arcs together.
Mm-hmm.
They're exploring that. They're exploring putting them up on the web, doing just digital download, doing direct to DVD or Blu-ray.
Oh, wow.
They're exploring everything, but they are absolutely determined. Lucasfilm is 100% determined and are going to get those last episodes out to people.
Good. I'm just
going to
shelve them.
There's one arc in particular that will explore the origins of Order 66 and will show how the clones were kind of tested a little bit before actual Order 66 went down to make sure that it worked. And then hopefully that will also give us a satisfying conclusion to Captain Rex's story.
There we go.
Because Captain Rex is no longer with the 501st in Episode 3. So there's some reason why
he's got a glitch.
He was the other question mark along with Ahsoka, and they finished Ahsoka Tano's story with the season finale of Season 5.
Sure, sure.
And so it'll be interesting. But those episodes are still coming.
They will make it out
almost
somehow.
An entire season of episodes is still on the way somehow.
Awesome. Fantastic. Good to know. What else? What else you got?
Oh, boy. What other lovely stuff can I not talk about? I'm trying to think of anything. Oh, man.
Ooh.
There's a huge one for gamers that I literally can't even hint about. I'm going to be such a dick right now. Just be like, holy shit. Guys, I know this really, really, really amazing.
All right,
we'll
tell you. Okay, well, can you name the company? Like who to watch for? Who do we need to look towards?
Here's an alternative. When we hit pause here before we go to last segment, can you tell us so that way when we come back from the break there before we do the closing, we can both go, "Whoa, my God, you guys, you have no idea."
Well, tell you what, which video game company do we need to look for towards in the coming like months or year?
A company.
Okay, how about this?
two companies.
What video game franchise do we need to be looking
for? It's a video game company team up that you're not expecting.
Oh my God.
And it's amazing,
is it like
huge,
Valve
crazy
and,
news.
And
yeah, it's
Total?
Totally going to be Halo and Portal, right?
And then here's number three that I'll tease for you. DC's Injustice, Gods Among Us. One of the two remaining characters that has not been revealed yet has actually been revealed in kind of a stealthy manner.
Is it via the comic book?
That's all I'm saying.
Oh, you bastard!
You're constantly giving us these scavenger hunts, and I gotta go back and start
actually,
like digging through stuff and looking for
these
clues.
One of the two of the initial roster left.
I can only imagine it's been teased in the comic book.
The DLC is gonna be fucking awesome for that game too.
Nice.
It's not just characters; it's also new special missions that are all based off of like the best comic book arcs that you can think of.
Wait, isn't this a fighting game?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But the story is really, really well integrated.
It's still a story-driven fighting game. Okay.
It really is.
Is it Batmite?
What you do in the game? In the story mode of the game, it'll take you through different characters. So you'll play as one character for 20 minutes, basically, you know, through a few fights. And in between the fights, there's no victory screen. There's no rounds that are actually showing up on the screen or anything. And then in between the fights, there's a short movie that takes you into the next fight. And actually, like, pulls it together with the story. I really think that this is going to be the first successfully story-driven fighting game ever.
Wow. Huh.
And it's, from what I've seen in the story so far, I've only seen about the first half hour, but it's awesome. It's really, really cool.
All right. Things to look forward to.
I know this guy will be playing it. Get it just so that we have a game that we can play together.
Yep. Aww.
There isn't a lot of local co-op left.
Harley Quinn's a hero in that universe.
Well, she kind of is in the
now.
New
like a straight-up hero, I guess, yeah.
All right. Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Lucas Siegel. Thank you so much for dropping by, man. It's been a fucking treat.
Have fun searching all over the internet in your long boxes now.
That's what I'm doing as soon as you leave. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys. It's fun.
Once again, we would like to thank Lucas Siegel of Newsarama.com for being our guest on the podcast this month.
I fucking love Lucas Siegel. Every time he comes here, he makes my heart so happy and I get so damn frustrated at the same time.
Right. He brings us gifts of secrets. And you guys, there are the gifts of secrets that he gives us after we stop recording that we can't share with you.
We heard a major secret that we are not allowed to talk about, and it is killing me.
I know. It's killing me too. We always ask him, we're like, hey, Lucas, maybe you could come on. Maybe you could talk about Batman stuff. Yeah, all right, guys, I'll come on and talk about Batman stuff. Then he comes on here and he tells us stuff that we're not supposed to know.
Right, right.
Stuff that you're not supposed to know.
Well, technically, stuff he's not supposed to know, but because he's such an insider.
He is the site editor of Newsarama.com.
Yeah, but like, it's all off the record when he's being talked to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Damn him. I love him so much.
Well, Lugo, what do you say we do the plugs and we get out of here? But first,
yes.
I feel like we have to address, I feel like at the end of last month's episode when we had the haiku contest.
Yes.
Which, again, congratulations to C. Muldrow, who won the haiku contest.
C. Muldrow made out like a bandit.
And also had her prizes hand delivered to her at South by Southwest this
month. I know, and she got to sing a song with you on stage.
On her birthday.
That dude, that is like epic.
Yeah, C. Muldrow was at the my showcase at South by Southwest this month, my show with Adam Warrock and Jesse Dangerously and Dual Core and
Backburner Crew
and Front and Lars, all those guys. And she was at the show and it was her birthday, and so she joined me on stage. She's also a very gifted singer, and she sang Thunder Thief with me, and it was delightful.
Yeah, there's a video of it online that you can peruse if you're so inquired.
If you know how to use YouTube, you can find it. Anyway, but at the end of last month, you also, since you just love throwing contests out now.
I do. I love contests.
You announced that there would be a contest, and I believe the rules of this contest, it wasn't write a haiku. It was just send us an email.
No, it was actually more specific than that. It was like, you have to go like our Facebook page, the Epic Win Facebook page, or follow us at Epic Win on Twitter, and you're automatically entered. But if you already followed us and liked us, you just have to like write a message saying that I listened to the podcast.
That was it? I don't remember those being the...
Yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah, that's it.
But here's the thing.
Here's the thing, folks. I've been in the hospital for most of March.
He's had lupus.
It's never lupus. I watch House. And so I have had zero opportunity to add any names, make any lists, check anything whatsoever. So tell you what, that contest is closed. So if you already sent me a message or liked us or followed us on social networks, then you are still in the running for the contest. I just haven't had the time to really kind of parse that out. So if you can bear with me one more month, we will announce a winner at the very next podcast.
But you will keep track of all of those who followed and emailed you. And
yes. So the contest is now closed. So you can't enter anymore. So anybody who
you
has...
You just got to wait a month.
You just got to wait a month for
and
the
what are we going to do? We're going to put names in a hat again?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll put all the names in a hat and we'll draw one name. And it's going to be as big a prize pack as I can find and afford. You know, if you like digital comics, I'll send you digital comics. If you like swag, we'll send you swag. You tell us what you want, and I will try and make it happen.
Can we send them an empty chemo bag, and will you sign it? Will the doctor let you take one of those with you?
No one's allowed to touch those, actually.
Oh, crap.
The size of the gloves that they wear for that crap is like mad doctor glove type thickness.
All right, then we won't. Well, they are doctors.
No, like mad doctor.
Mad doctor.
Yeah, like
like
mad
scientist. Like in a castle and lightning and stuff.
Yeah. Right. Like Frankenstein monsters.
All right, so no new contest this month. If you entered last month, you can wait another month because...
Yeah, be patient. I have cancer.
Life is precious. So let's do some plugs.
Yes.
Let me look at my calendar here. Let's see what I have coming up that I need to plug to the audience.
Sure.
Oh, here's something.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I know what it is, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Ladies and gentlemen, on Wednesday, April 3rd, 2013.
Yeah.
We're going to present a show at the Tank Theater in New York City, and it is going to be a benefit show
oh, dear.
For Nelson Lugo. Look, we've talked about the physical toll that this process has taken on him, as well as a psychological toll. Yeah. But there is a tremendous financial toll. These chemo treatments are not cheap, and nor was his 20-day hospital stay. So a number of Lugo's favorite performers are getting together, and we're going to put on a show. And all ticket sales are going to go to Nelson Lugo. The Tank Theater is going to forego their cut. The performers are working for free. We have other performers offering prizes for our raffle. And it's all just to raise some money to take a little bit of a dent out of Lugo's hospital bills.
For the record, I am absolutely uncomfortable with every aspect of this production.
Right. And again, nobody cares what Lugo wants. This is... We're doing this for you. We're not doing this with you.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously.
And also, for those of you who do not live in New York City and cannot attend the show on Wednesday, April 3rd, there will be an online donation link added eventually. It should be added in the next week or so. I've got to coordinate with the people from the Tank Theater who are helping me with the show. But it'll be up. I will announce it all over social media, so you'll see it. So if you would like to give to the cause, that would be great. Otherwise, we have a stellar show on April 3rd with Foxy Vermouth, Femme Appeal, Rita Menweep, Topher Bousquet, Francine the Lucid Dream, Amelia Bearparts, Peter Aguero, Boo Bess, Magdalena Fox, BB Hart, Two Stage Kittens, Sherry Cola and Charles Stunning, and the whole event will be hosted by both Bastard Keith and myself. My name is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
And I'll be in attendance. I'll buy a ticket like everybody else.
No, you will not buy a ticket. What else you got to plug this month? You got a lot of stuff, Luke.
Well, we actually have three Epic Win shows this month. We have on April 6th.
What do you mean three?
Three. We have three Epic Win shows.
Oh, because one's a double feature?
Yeah.
All right.
There are three shows.
All right, fine.
The first show is on April 6th, Saturday, April 6th at R Bar NYC. And that is the New Nerd Review, the best and the brightest of the freshest crop of burlesquers coming to shake their nerdy wares in front of all the audiences ever. So come on out, support some of the new performers, and you get to see the new kids on the block, so to speak.
The night before that, on Friday, April 5th, I will be performing at Mercury Lounge in Manhattan,
sweet.
New York City. I will be performing with Kudzu and the Faggettes.
Really?
Those of you who listen to the podcast will know that Kudzu is the band of Dr. Eviler, my ex-wife, who was our guest on the podcast last month.
Wait, so you're opening for them?
I believe so. I don't think we've worked out the actual order yet, but there may be another band. I'm not sure the details. She just asked me a couple of days ago. But if you want to come and see me and Dr. Eviler grace the same stage and maybe have a knife fight over tequila shots after the show, come on down to the Mercury Lounge on Friday, April 5th.
Dude, you know what? If I'm well enough, I'm totally going to that. On April 13th,
That's
a Saturday at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. We have our monthly double feature. First on the block is Harry Potter. If you want to get all of your wands and brooms and boobs in the same stage, then this is the show for you, for all you Potterheads out there. The second show, and that's going to be at 7 p.m., the second show is going to be Twilight Zone and Alfred Hitchcock. It's going to be a cult TV show with all of your favorite episodes coming to life and getting naked.
The night before that, Friday, April 12th, at the Tank Theater, Mary Sinn will be presenting her Shakespeare burlesque show.
Oh, that's right.
I make note of this because I will be performing in it.
Awesome. You're going to be waxing the bard, as they say?
I don't know what that means.
It's not a masturbation euphemism.
Oh, terrific. Then I will not be doing that. I will be reciting a scene from Macbeth and trying my damnedest not to say Macbeth on stage so that the theater kids don't cry.
Oh, dear.
On Saturday, April 20th, our stage kittens in the Nelson Lugo benefit show, Sherry Cola and Charles Stunning, they will be presenting. They are a burgeoning new production company themselves.
Oh, that's right.
Honey Badger Burlesque.
Yeah.
They're doing a circus-themed show in Long Island City, which is really basically Astoria. It's just a neighboring neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I will be guest hosting their maiden voyage.
That's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a good time.
I like those ladies a lot. They're a lot of fun.
They are a lot of fun. There's another one in here. Oh, my God. On Thursday, April 25th, which I guess is the day our next episode will air, I will be performing at the Bitter End in Manhattan. I will be performing with Brandon Patton. He's the bass player of MC Frontalot's band.
Brandon! I used to play Magic the Gathering with him.
Lugo and Brandon used to play Magic the Gathering together.
Back in the day.
Gabriel Serbins.
Who?
She is one of the vocalists of Wheatus.
Oh!
She will be performing some of her solo material.
Wonderful.
I will be performing my set.
Whoa!
And headlining the show, an all-acoustic set from Wheatus.
An acoustic Wheatus?
An acoustic Wheatus set. Brendan B. Brown of Wheatus will be there with his acoustic guitar. We can assume he will probably perform Teenage Dirtbag.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
As well as dozens of his other awesome
songs.
That would be fun.
I'm going to try and make it out to that.
Last but not least, on Saturday, April 27th, I will be returning to the Parkside Lounge in Manhattan.
Oh, sweet.
To host our friend Francine, who produces the David Lynch theme burlesque show. She's done another number of Twin Peaks shows. She did a Blue Velvet show. She did a Mulholland Drive show. She did a Lost Highway show. She did a Wild at Heart show. Well, on April 27th, she's going to satisfy those dreams of dozens by finally producing, I kid you not, a Dune-themed burlesque show.
She's insane.
She is. I will be hosting that, and I can guarantee you the spice will flow.
Dude, I will pay you all the monies from the benefit if you wear a still suit. If you make a still suit.
If all the monies from the benefit can probably buy me. I would wear one if I could afford it, but I've looked at some tutorials online. They're expensive to make.
Yeah.
I think I'm actually going to make a doctor's uniform and then do my hair orange, my eyebrows orange, and I will be a doctor from House Harkonnen.
Nice.
Yes. You know those, all those jerks.
Yeah, all those a-holes.
I think I'm going to be a doctor from House Harkonnen.
Very
and
cool.
I will spend the duration of the show trying to understand what Dune is about.
You and everybody
Look,
else.
I didn't read the book. I've seen the movie, but since her burlesque shows are based on David Lynch films, I feel like it's I'm not going to go and read the book.
No.
I have to use only what David Lynch has given me.
Yes, you
which
can only...
is a nightmare.
A whole lot of confusing mess, basically.
So that's a lot of opportunities to come and see.
That's a lot of
see
stuff
me on stage and
month.
Come and see Lugo hanging out. Lugo will if his health is up to snuff, he will be hosting the new Nerd Review.
If it's up to snuff, yes.
And he will definitely be at the benefit show, right?
Yes, okay. either by my own power or wheelchair power, I will be there.
It's a lot of shows to plug, but really the important one is Wednesday, April 3rd. Please, if you are in New York City, please come out. It's going to be an awesome time.
And if you don't go, you know what? I still love you. It's okay. It's all right. I you know, all of this makes me uncomfortable anyway. So just send me a nice get well card. That'd be nice.
Really? It's... Just a nice get well card, you'll be all right. All right, cool. Well, you heard it from Lugo himself. Well, I think that's it. I think that's
a wrap. That's a damn good episode. I had a really good time tonight.
I think we should sit here. We should spend another 5 minutes and talk about how great we are at running our awesome podcast.
No, you
want to do that?
I'm done. I have cancer, and I'm gonna go rest now.
I've got a refrigerator full of Crusher brownies, so I've got things to do too.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 8 of the Epic Podcast. My name is Nelson Lugo.
And my name is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Be safe, Internet.
Bye. Yeah. The Epic Podcast is brought to you by Nerdy Show. All programming on the Nerdy Show Network is listener-supported. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, you can show your support by telling a friend or going to nerdyshow.com and clicking the support button. Even a small contribution gets you cool nerdy perks and allows you to take part in our monthly support drive contests. For more episodes of the Epic Podcasts, videos, contests, and other nerdy programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Subscribe to all our latest episodes via the iTunes Store. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter at Nerdy Show to keep up to date on the latest Nerdy Show news.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.